Very Bravo podcast. I'm Elizabeth, and I'm joined by my lovely friend and co-host, Mr. Alex Moran. Hi, Alex.
Hello. I have two taglines this week.
Wow.
You can pick which one is better.
Okay.
And my taglines, you know, they're usually pretty good, and you could imagine any housewife saying them.
Oh, naturally.
But these are more in the spirit of the holidays.
Mm.
And so their quality has suffered for it. I know me better than I know myself. I know me better than an elf on a shelf.
Okay, perfect.
Okay, I don't even want to say the other one.
No, we want to hear
that,
option two.
Nope, that one's
nope,
that
option
one got
two.
A better response
nope,
than it should
nope,
have.
Nope.
I'm ending there. All right,
nope.
Fine. Don't you dare mistake me for a toy from Santa Claus's workshop up there in the North Pole, because you cannot play with me.
Oh, I like God. The second one a lot.
Okay, you get on me for explaining my stickers in like paragraphs.
I know. I didn't even write it that way. I just added words while doing it because I was not confident in it.
Clunky.
Are you saying you didn't workshop that, Alex?
Don't you dare accuse me of being in the North Pole with Santa Claus, as I said earlier.
Oh, man. We're also joined by my lovely sister and our co-host, Miss Julia Baker. Hi, Jules.
Baby, it's COVID outside and I'll be zooming all around.
Oh my God.
No, you guys are both doing Christmas ones. You didn't tell me. I don't have a Christmas theme.
Christmas is this week. This is our Christmas pod.
That's right. It's Christmas time. That's on you, not on us.
Aww.
You love Christmas time. I'm supposed to remind you it's Christmas time?
I just need to make a... Oh, no, I'm sad. All right. Well, mine
You can have one of mine. I do.
Okay.
Take I know myself better than I know myself one.
Yeah, I'm taking the first one. You can have the second one. And also, I also have the tagline, it ain't no baloney. They're bringing back Maloney. Because it was announced that they're bringing back Maloney to Law & Order SVU. Elliot Stabler is returning. And Law & Order SVU is my... Julia, what do you think?
I thought you were talking about Katie Malone. I agree.
No.
Because she was on Salt Lake City this week.
Oh, that would have been better. No.
Except I love... completely on Bravo.
No, I love Law & Order SVU so much. And so the guy who plays Elliot Stabler, Maloney...
Mm. No relation
to
Katie.
He's just... No relation. That's her dad.
Oh, I take it back.
No, I'm just kidding. I made that up. That was baloney. So he's in a season and then he's just gone because, like, I guess they got in a fight over contracts. So he's been gone for a long time now, like years, and they're bringing him back.
I love him. He's such a funny actor. It's so funny.
He's in Veep.
He's in Wet Hot American Summer. He's like John Hamm in that he's like known for like a very serious leading role in a drama.
Mm-hmm.
But like everything else he does is like a weird like comedy thing.
Because Happy is like insane. And then he's, you know, plays the dumb personal trainer slash lover of Selena in Veep.
That's
which is
right.
A very fun stint.
And he's in love with a can in Wet Hot American Summer. It's one of the funniest performances ever.
Well, anyway, I'm excited that he's returning to my comfort show. I know it's kind of morbid, but I like to wrap Christmas presents and watch Law & Order SVU. So, Julia and Alex, when you get your presents, remember that.
You want a morbid gift?
No, that your gift has been wrapped while somebody's been murdered in the background.
Oh.
Remember. I should keep that in your little noodles. Boop-a-da-boop, boop-a-da-boop. Hot off the press. We have some more Erica Jayne news. People have been saying... Oh, she filed for divorce because she's saying that Tom cheated on her. BS. They're in it together. They're trying to hide the money from people who are plane crash victims' families. So it's not great. And so Erica decides to release a photo on Instagram that I think was up there for like a total of 10 minutes before she took it down. It's a series of screenshots. Alex, do you see this? That have all been sent on what appears to be a Motorola Razr. So they're saying that Tom Girardi had an affair with a judge, which is going to be not great for all of the cases that they were together on, if you catch them all drift. And so the judge was appointed to the Court of Appeals in 2008. They have all of these things. Basically, these text messages are from 2008. The text messages are questionable at best. Lots of XOXO. Pictures of her butt in jeans. I thought that was the most interesting part. It's like her laying on a bed with a close-up of her butt, but it's not like her butt pushed in the air. It's like nice 2008 flat butt. And then Erica names the person. She was fucking my husband Tom Girardi, and he was paying her sax bill. She makes sure to mention that. And playing for her plastic surgery. I mean, what do we think? What is our stance on their divorce?
I've been put on an emotional roller coaster with this. As you know, on election day, I was super depressed about the fact that Erica and Tom were getting divorced. And then, though it's horrible about the money for the plane crash victims, I was kind of delighted by the Bonnie and Clyde of it all. Like, mm-hmm. they were in this together and they're in cahoots. But the more it plays out, the more I think the best case scenario for us as viewers is if Erica Girardi didn't know this was happening and she just knew her husband had affairs and she doesn't know about the money for the plane crash victims and she is just an innocent person in all of this. I think the evidence is kind of stacking up against my theory.
I have bad news.
I think Bethany Frankel definitely put it best to summarize Erica Girardi in this, and that is that she tweeted out, "One thing I always say, you can't play stupid and smart at the same time."
Wow. Dude, see, that's why Bethany is like my favorite housewife. I want her to come back.
So I'm not an expert on this, but I do want to speak to that Bethany Frankel quote and say, yes, that's very true. But you can play stupid and smart on separate occasions by themselves very well. And my case in point is Christopher Maloney.
Tying it back.
From Law & Order SVU. That's my thoughts on this.
All right. I think that we wrapped that up in a very confusing bow. I love it.
But you know what? I am an expert in
what?
Real Housewives of Potomac. Ooh, Elizabeth, cue that transition.
Let's get into it. So this week on Potomac, we have part one of a three-part reunion, Alex's favorite episodes.
This is what Bravo's all about, the reunion eps. It's just so funny having to, because they've all seen the show.
Yeah.
Sometimes they deny that they've seen the show. I know that on Vanderpump, a lot of the time, they're like, we didn't watch this season. And then they clearly had.
Well, we see backstage that the PAs are giving them iPads to watch the episodes that hadn't aired yet.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So they're watching it like right then and there.
Yeah, they show up at 6 a.m. and they're put to work.
And they're prepared. They know what they're going to talk about. They've been stewing on it, like all these months of watching the conflicts that they were involved with on air. They're like ready to defend themselves, attack others, and if you're like Monique.
Yeah, well, you can tell that Monique hasn't been put on the call list enough because she has some time on her hands with that Chekhov's binder.
Oh, yes. So Chekhov's binder, named after Chekhov's gun. If you bring a gun on stage, it has to go off, and that binder.
That was open, one tab at a time, though we only got one tab this episode, so we know there's two nothing more in the other tabs left. No.
Do you think it's all the Giselle tab?
I think it's blank paper.
Do you think there's an Ashley tab? That's what I was wondering.
No, because she and Ashley are friends. I think that they're kind of in cahoots together.
It looked like everyone had a tab, though. There were a lot of tabs.
There were a lot of tabs.
Tab. You never know. She doesn't know what Ashley's going to do. I mean, Ashley's been consistently loyal, but like, I don't know. If I'd watched Potomac seasons 1 through 5, I would also have an Ashley tab.
So Monique brings this binder on stage, and she's thick. That is a 2.5 to 3 inch binder.
You can tell she's hired a lot of cousins as her assistants with that binder.
Yes. And it is color-coded. There are tabs, and she says, "These are my receipts," which there are. She literally pulls out screenshots that have been printed in proper housewife fashion, full size to take up an 11x8 piece of paper. I have to say, our biggest takeaway from episode one of the reunion was Karen's conspiracy theory comes to life that Jamal and Giselle are fake. They are not actually together.
Lives in the phone.
Yep, lives in the phone. The fist pump wasn't real.
And Giselle is pretty silent. Like, she does confirm that what Monique's reading on her receipts is his phone number. Like, he is texting
this girl.
She
painstakingly reads the digits aloud.
I'm going to back up from there. Before we even get there, Andy Cohen turns to Giselle and says, "So are you and Jamal, Pastor Jamal, together?" And she says, "Sure am."
Yeah.
Like every couple.
And Elizabeth, you mentioned when we were watching this that, like, housewives have been fired for this. And
you can't make a story.
I'm worried about Giselle.
This is the end of Giselle, I think. You can't make a story. So the whole thing is that Giselle is worried she doesn't have a storyline. So her storyline is she is going to get back together with her ex-husband, which was her storyline this season. And the whole thing is that Karen and Monique, with her receipt binder, say that this was all fabricated and that she and Jamal are in cahoots, like, hey, I need a storyline. Let's pretend this. And Monique brings out the binder. And the binder is text messages between Jamal and another woman. And he says it's just for TV. It's not real, referring to him and Giselle. Andy Cohen says, how do we know this is real? And Monique says, I'll read the number out loud. And she does. It gets bleeped out. And Giselle says it's her his number.
But honestly, in Giselle's defense, she knows that number. Do you know how many numbers I have memorized? 3.
Hit me.
Yeah. Elizabeth and 911. Like the forms where it's like, who is your emergency contact? She knows that number. He's her emergency contact.
Women have read his number to her before. Fabricating is in her nature. The whole Fallujah incident that happened.
Oh my gosh,
reunion.
That was hilarious.
She's trying to instigate this whole thing between Wendy and Karen. Yeah. Because they've had tension the whole season.
I think it's really been the sneaky storyline has been Karen versus Giselle in this weird backhanded way. That's been like the underlying thing through this whole season that we haven't really spot on looked at.
Absolutely. But Wendy is the one that's like the most like in Karen's mm-hmm. face throughout
yes.
the season.
Yes, yes,
and
yes.
Giselle tries to stoke the fire a bit by saying that what is it that she followed Floozy with?
A freelancer.
What she's saying Karen said about Wendy's multiple appearances at different like conferences and talks that she's been to with Karen.
They're for a living. She goes on CNN, Fox News as a freelancer.
Freelance correspondent.
Is absolutely not a slam at all. It's
a job description.
Giselle tells Wendy in a very nice alliterative way she's a floozy freelancer, which really sets Wendy off. Giselle says Karen said this. We find out, nope, Giselle added the word floozy.
Which she cops to immediately. Andy Cohen says, Giselle told Wendy that you said that she was a freelance floozy. And then Karen's like, what? And then Giselle goes, well, I added the floozy. So then it's just Wendy is a freelancer, which is a fact. That is Wendy's job title. It's like a freelancer correspondent. This is what I'm saying.
I still think Karen, I'm still team Karen when it comes to her and
Wendy. I'm team Karen about anything. I love Karen. But this is what I'm talking about. Giselle has put herself in the hot seat with the fabricated Jamal stuff. I was on board with them. I was like, oh, this is so sad while we were watching it. But now the evidence is stacking up and I'm totally turning around.
Jamal took to the internet. He did an Instagram live or some such. And
a Facebook live, I think.
He said he regretted going on the show. And a lot of other things. But in this 25-minute live broadcast, he brought his own binder.
He brings a binder. Julie, can I say my favorite part?
Yes.
In that 25-minute video, he holds up the binder. And he says, Monique might have brought a binder. You can't bring receipts if I own the cash register. That's his spicy starter.
Yeah, what does that mean? It's not saying that it's like a fraudulent thing at all or that it's made up.
Well, I mean, yeah, that's factual. If the cash register owns the receipts, those are text messages from Jamal. So
yeah, they're his. It's true.
Yeah, what?
Wait, so what was in his cash register? I did not watch
that's
this.
That's the end. He says that sassy line and continues on to other plot points.
That was like a little zing.
I'm gonna summarize the main points from my favorite points from that 25-minute Instagram live / Facebook live video. So Monique on the reunion says that he has a girlfriend in New York City. His response to that is, you can't cheat if you're single. Uh-oh, not looking good for Giselle.
Okay.
And he makes sure to make a point that he has never had any babies with anyone in his congregation.
Okay. Well, Monique saying swinging your big D around your congregation may have been one of my favorite lines of this.
I mean, at this point, I'm not going to take anything he says as gospel, if you will. But
I can't imagine Potomac without Giselle. I hope that this is not her undoing. I'm
she
a little
made
worried
two storylines. People have been fired for less. Like, look at the Beverly Hills.
You can't fire one of the two green-eyed bandits.
You can't have green-eyed bandit. It just doesn't have the same ring.
So in Beverly Hills, the huge thing was that Kyle Richards and her sister Kim, with Teddy, fabricated this whole thing. Well, it was real, maybe, or maybe not, that Denise Richards and Brandy hooked up. But like, that wasn't even a storyline, but they really pushed it and people have lost their minds. Teddy got fired and Kyle was like in the hot seat for a hot minute. So people have been fired for fabricating storylines because that's not what we came here to watch. We came to watch real lives, quote unquote.
Yeah, so, this is the genre of reality television.
So I think Giselle is either on the chopping block or is near to. Andy Cohen has said before that a lot of times housewives are on the chopping block. They don't know, and how they perform at the reunions is the make or break. And that was said right after Dorinda got fired.
And she's sitting pretty silent as a lamb over there on the right-hand side of Andy Cohen. So, yeah.
But she's getting roasted by everybody else.
Because, like, where does she go storyline-wise after this? Because I can't imagine Jamal would come back. That seems like that won't happen.
Even if he does come back, we can't do it because we don't believe it anymore. So she can't do that. She's going to have to either pick a fight with somebody, but we're so annoyed by her at this point.
Like, but her prominent role anyway is being the one that kind of, like,
stirs the pot.
The wrong questions at the wrong time.
But it's,
I feel like that's an ingredient you need in this.
But
cast.
It's fake. Ashley throws people under the bus like it's her job, and I love Ashley.
But
like
Giselle does it in a really smart way. She does it is very smart, and it's in a way where like she does it, and then like the heat is off her immediately, and like a fight ensues. Like she's almost like a producer of the show in that
but
way.
But what I think is the issue is that she makes things up to stir the pot. Things like adding the word floozy. That
she did get caught with the floozy.
So I mean, she's got two lies back to back, two huge lies. She's got one trying to start a storyline that never picked up. Maybe it did pick up, and that's why Wendy's been so like intense towards. Don't want to use the word aggressive. Wendy told us we're not allowed to say aggressive. I did think it was really interesting, and I totally get what Wendy says. Like, you need to be careful what kind of words you use to describe people. You know, kind of referring to. Hoodlum and
right, but also Monique comments that I mean, they're words that Candace has used.
Candace says the word bedwinch. Like,
I loved it when Andy called Candace out and he said that she was what was it? She's like a train wreck on Twitter. What was his insult? And she goes,
yeah,
thank you, which is such like a like an immature fighting tactic to be thank you.
She hated that. You could tell she hated that so much.
And I got what Wendy was trying to say, but I also thought it was very interesting that when I think it was Karen or Ashley were trying to say, like, well, what words would you like us to use? She kind of wasn't sure.
Because they don't like the place that Wendy's coming from with it. They don't like why she's making that argument.
Because it's a valid argument, but it's coming from kind of like a bullshitty place with like Candace. Yeah. So, but oh man, you guys, thank God Monique hasn't been on television this whole time because I have been like liking Monique more and more, but I think it's like distance makes the heart grow fonder because watching her have no remorse is making me like her less.
Do you think it's also because you've just been having to watch Candace?
I think Candace
talk about it so much.
I think, yeah, it's, the more I see Candace talk about it, the more annoyed I get with Candace. But now Monique has come on stage and like done her evil chuckle about like, and I'd do it again. I mean, like,
I think because we've spent so much time with Candace, who is a great actress, by the way. Watch Christmas Lottery.
Yeah, catch out our bonus sode coming out later this week.
It makes me like the Monique doubling down on shit more.
Oh my God. Okay. Hot take from Alex. Julia, any final thoughts on this reunion part one?
Yeah, I do really like that Candace and Monique both brought tons of props. Monique has brought T'Challa, which is just a giant prop for her all season. And now she has the binder. Mm-hmm. And then Candace last minute realizes she also needs a prop and brings herself a giant ass fan to flick the hate away and to bring the love closer to herself.
See, that's the shit that I hate about Candace.
That was insane.
When he's like, I like your fan, she's like, thanks, it's to flick away the haters. I'm like, shut the fuck up, Candace.
My note about that was literally just Candace's prop, question mark. I was so turned up by that.
The best part of this whole thing was like kind of glazed over, but one of my favorite parts was when Andy, he's like, people roast Giselle's fashion, and he goes around the room and he goes to Rob and he's like, what do you think about Giselle's fashion? And she like doesn't want to say it's horrible.
Mm-hmm. Oh. I felt bad for Giselle during that whole thing. They roast her for so long.
I love that Wendy says that she has pretty girl syndrome, which she does. And she's like, I'll take it.
I get what Wendy's saying. She's like, you're so gorgeous. Anything you put on is going to be gorgeous. So I'm like, why bother trying?
Yeah. There was the very predictable Wendy degrees montage that we all knew was going to happen.
Oh, yeah. But I think it was funny. Wasn't it delightful to see anyway?
It was. But then when she said, like, I feel like I have to defend my degrees, it makes me so sad because I think she's not understanding why people are getting frustrated. And so she's feeling like she's getting attacked more, which I totally get. I just hope that she can take a step back and like kind of let herself be her own person, because I think if Wendy did do that and kind of less like looked less for outside sources, aka her mom, for validation, she'd be a lot happier and feel like she needs to defend herself less.
Yeah,
and could kind of chill out.
I liked the cut to her nodding in approval when they talk about how Candace is getting her MBA in a business.
And she's like, yes, another
that's right.
Another degree. Yes, yes. She did stand up at that table and scream at Ashley, I have 4 degrees. I'm a doctor. Refer to me as a doctor. When the argument was over, whether or not you're allowed to bring a baby on this trip.
Yeah.
Well, you know what offends Ashley more than that is when someone says that her baby looks like her husband.
Which is odd because, like, has she seen her baby, Dean? I feel like they.
But still, like, it's just a weird thing to take offense.
White baby, and her man, her husband, is a big white bald baby.
And all babies that age look like their dads. It's just like the thing babies do.
I mean, that's a biological thing, Julia.
It is.
Because Ashley says to Robin about that, isn't that like rude to say that about like my baby? And Robin's like, I don't know. She's so confused like we are about it.
I can't believe anyone was taking Robin seriously though with that hairdo.
I think it was her hair with gold crimped into it.
So bad. It was so bad.
Robin's hair matches Giselle's fashion.
Right. Which is why she couldn't say anything when asked.
I hope for the new year, I hope that Ashley sees her worth and leaves Michael.
She's having baby number two. That's not happening. But as I looked at this cast, I know we're only one of three episodes in. I really hope nothing changes for next year.
Andy Cohen said after filming, nothing will change.
Good. So they're just all safe.
But that was in reference to Monique and Candace.
When people were asking before Jamal took to Facebook Live.
Yeah, I think that was like this week. So. Right. He might have dug her grave for her. You know what I mean? Like, oh, shit.
She is such a big part. I don't see it happening. I think Giselle stays.
Okay, let's move on over to Atlanta, episodes 1 and 2.
Boop, boop.
All right, so we are going to be covering episodes 1 and 2 so we can catch up with Real Housewives of Atlanta.
This is the first Bravo show that we've started in COVID. I feel like Portia is just doing the most outstanding job and standing up for Breonna Taylor.
Breonna Taylor's mom even makes an appearance.
Yeah.
She goes and like welcomes everybody after Portia's getting released after being arrested during the protest. And it was kind of like, oh, I forgot what I was watching. Thought I was watching a documentary.
A documentary on BLM.
And then... Oh, yeah. This is a Bravo Housewives show.
Oh, yeah. Cut to a gathering with Rosé where everyone's close together. Nipples are out. Masks are off.
It is pretty crazy. And, like, that's how you know we're on a Bravo show is, like, it's a roller coaster. Black Lives Matter protests. We're seeing people getting gassed. We're seeing people getting arrested. LOL, boobs are out. Nipples back down. I was emotionally abused by my husband. But look how fun my lawyer is. It was just such a roller coaster. And that's what I love about Bravo shows. And I think Atlanta is just going to continue delivering this exciting roller coaster.
This is my first time ever watching this one. I didn't realize how many friggin' seasons there were of this show. My God.
It's one of the oldest,
so it's
right?
Like OC New York. And then number hot three? Off the press right after that was Atlanta. And it's been going strong.
Oh, it's consistent.
I am a new peach in this orchard.
I am also a new peach in this orchard.
Do you know
Alex?
Who isn't a ripened peach, which is tragic because she's been delivering season after season, is Marlo has never
Marlo,
held a peach.
Our friend of Julia, has Marlo been on since the beginning?
She's been here for like 7-8 years. She's been around. And
she is the funniest person I've ever seen on TV.
Never a peach. There's like a lot of theories. People are worried that she's gonna be like a liability, but that woman does not have a peach.
She does get drunk. She gets Sonia Morgan
drunk. But when she came in with her mask and like taking
everybody's temperature.
adventure. She just comes with the most every time. A woman with a prop.
Her one-liners. I might write them down next episode. Her one-liners deliver. Speaking of peaches, can we get into taglines?
Yes.
Please. All right, are we ready?
What are the ladies saying this year?
All right, the ladies are saying, Kenya, if you don't like my shade, then step out of my shadow. 10 out of 10.
Awesome.
Wonderful.
Season
so good.
Housewife.
Classic.
Love it.
Classic
Kenya's amazing. Tagline. Candy. A little candy always helps sweeten the tea. Another okay. gossip themed. I like it.
Grammy winning songwriting cred on a little song called No Scrubs.
No
yes!
way!
She candy
That's
is
right.
Holy
legit.
Smokes. Okay, she is going to be cashing those royalties. Okay, Drew, our new housewife with the most confusing tagline for me.
Because she's a
we
baby.
Don't know her very well. Because she's a BB. She gets introduced in episode 2, which I found interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
And so here's her tagline. I was in the game, but now I'm calling all the plays. Not
she was in the show The Game.
Which is what LaToya
oh my God,
makes
I'm
reference
stupid.
To when she's like, I hate you, Drew. But it was because she broke
a
up.
A couple in the fictional show The Game. Okay,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm dumb. I'm on board now. Okay, Cynthia.
Oh, you like it now?
Yeah, I wasn't getting it. I was thinking basketball.
I mean,
not
I still don't
connection.
Like because I think that people aren't going to get it.
I mean, I didn't know
it
The is, Game.
It does take a lot of explaining.
I didn't know until they talked about it a lot in the episode.
LaToya did a solid by explaining it to us.
Oh, we will get into LaToya later, Julia. Okay. You hold your horses, young lady. Okay, Cynthia. I've been through the peaks and the valleys, and now I'm head over hills.
Because Mike Hill is her fiance.
Okay.
Last but not least. Portia, I may be social distancing, but I'm here for social justice. A wonderful
Pretty
time.
Good.
Pretty good. Pretty good.
I mean, she's setting up her storyline. It's great.
And I feel like in the first two episodes, she hasn't even intermingled with the cast.
No.
Nope. She's been living up to her tagline.
She was protesting, and then she got arrested, and then she came home to be with her daughter, and that's kind of all we've seen of Portia. So very cool. Very exciting.
Which makes her my favorite person so far in the
Me
show.
Me too. So we have two friends of that in my head are battling it out because I have never personally seen two friends of. We have Marlo, a OG friends of, and then we have LaToya.
LaToya's been around a couple of times, but she is fighting for that peach.
She wants it bad. She is coming in hard, and I love it, but I'm also like, okay, kind of, you gotta act like you don't want it that much. You gotta take
Why
it
does Marlo not have a peach? I must.
A liability, Julia.
There's
Julia
rumors
says that,
that she might be a liability. There's something.
She does get very drunk.
There's an issue to where they can't make her a full fledged cast member.
But I'm gonna call shenanigans on that. We've seen Luann in a bush. We saw Leah almost torch Ramona's house. We've seen Sonia take water pills and drink a bunch. And that's just the cast of New York.
Marlo also, I feel like she goes on all the group trips. And she's in every group scene. I really don't understand why she
Julia,
hasn't
Julia, I have a question.
Peach.
Have we had a friend up who's consistent? Because, again, I'm thinking of New York.
Danny.
Danny and Marlo.
Danny of Southern Charm.
They should.
But that's a Southern Charm franchise.
It's like the
like,
uncelebrated cast of Bravo. Danny and Marlo should start a support group.
A perennial friend of.
Why won't
poor
they
Marlo
give these women
found the same fate.
Full-on cast membership? Interesting.
Maybe LaToya didn't get her peach because she got served divorce papers from her husband while living in the same home as him during COVID.
During quarantine. Oh
and
God.
Did not turn on the video on her phone. She can't produce her own
shit.
Yeah,
she didn't record that.
Record
a housewife
it.
Would record it.
Yeah. How dare she live her life and like process her emotions in a normal way and not film
that's
it.
That's not what a Bravo employee
that's her
does.
Her fatal flaw.
So in our first episode, I'm team Marlo. I'm like, give Marlo. If we got one peach, I'm giving it to Marlo. But episode 2, LaToya's coming for you, Marlo. Better watch out.
Yeah, episode 1, Marlo felt like the comic relief almost.
Oh my gosh. Marlo's hilarious. I was dying.
I feel like in episode 2, LaToya and Marlo almost like go at it in Kenya's house.
Yeah.
And they were like shrieking at each other.
It was a friend of off.
Yeah.
I do have to move us forward to Drew, our newest housewife, and I think that's what we really want to talk about, is not necessarily Drew, but her bizarre dynamic with her husband. So we open up with Drew, and is her
aunt. Her live-in mother is a lot.
So there's a mother slash pastor who lives with them because of COVID, accidentally got stuck there.
Pastor Jeanette.
And it is their anniversary, and it's a big shindig, which is the kiss of death for Bravo, as we learned on Salt Lake City. We saw two grand gestures for Drew in one episode. She got breakfast and bread, and then she got a balloon arch. And on Real Housewives of Salt Lake City, we got a, what can only be referred to as, flower coffin to Meredith. And this is the kiss of death for marriages. We know marriages are going down the hill with grand gestures.
That's true. This grand gesture was one of the strangest ones I've ever seen, though, because it was her mom entering the room, presenting the breakfast to her in bed while singing to her.
Yeah, she was singing happy birthday with anniversary instead of birthday.
Happy anniversary to you.
The bouquet that is also present on the thing she's serving breakfast on, that's just so, like, in the way it of is, everything.
Like, top heavy, and even the husband, Ralph, is like, I think this thing's gonna
so
fall over.
So we know.
Husband, Ralph.
Whoa, foreshadow.
I think this thing's gonna fall over, more like fall off, Julia. Oh, I love it. What a transition.
Oh, my.
Later on, we are at dinner, where we have one very nervous chef serving two fighting grown adults dinner, and they're drinking champagne.
Drew starts the dinner off by saying, we never had a proper wedding. We have to celebrate our 7th year marriage with a full-on wedding.
Because they eloped on the beach.
He loves the beach.
I have never seen the start of a Lifetime movie play itself out so perfectly well on Bravo TV. So we're eating dinner with the balloon arch in the background. We're serving champagne and we're minding our own business. And then she says, I don't know where you were for 3 days. And his answer is, I'm a black man. You shouldn't need to know. And I'm
not a black man,
but I don't think that's true. Gonna put it out there.
It was strange.
Also, he has cameras set up everywhere and has taken screenshots of Drew sleeping on the couch to where she's taken his phone and seen the screenshots. Like Dirty John vibes.
Yes,
this is so fascinating to me. We got to go a little more step by step here because it is like a weird like Lifetime murder movie.
It's insane. The buildup is crazy.
We open with Drew talking to the ladies. They're talking about relationships and stuff. We see Ralph and Mr. Hill talking about relationships, and Ralph goes, you know, it's so like wild with her mom there. Sometimes I just have to get away, but like I make sure all like our affairs are in order and everything before I get away. They have their side of it. Cut to Drew talking about how sometimes he goes away and doesn't tell her where he's going, and it's kind of a big deal and kind of fucked up. So that feels like a classic setup in like a Lifetime murder movie, where we see the people in the relationship talking to their friends about like the same thing, and then we get this confrontation scene.
And where the fact that Ralph chose to go to Tampa, Florida, I feel just like it's more evidence towards a Lifetime murder mystery.
And the fact that he won't even reveal that to her.
It's a beach. What beach? Tampa.
In this state?
No.
Not in this state. Why do you need to know? You don't need to know that. How does that help you?
I wish we could put it into bullet points of what we saw, but it was just like, we watched her be gaslit. Like, that should, if you Google gaslighting, that should be the video that plays next to the definition. Because he's saying, you don't need to know, you're crazy for needing to know, you're being too intrusive. And then she paints the picture for us where I'm upstairs, I go downstairs looking for you for dinner, and you're gone. And you don't tell me where you are, and you were gone for 3 days. Meanwhile,
and you're watching us with the cameras in the house.
Yes, meanwhile, he has cameras in the house and he's recording her sleeping on the couch. Julia, what else?
And another tragic thing is that she has this Achilles heel injury, so she's wearing this boot this whole time.
She can't go anywhere.
Yeah,
tragic.
This is a Lifetime movie setup if I've ever seen one. She literally
cannot
run.
I'm so worried for Drew.
And he is disappearing, like, I am scared for her safety. And we've seen some real shit go down on Bravo. I'm not going to like say it, but like early OC has some very dark stuff.
Do you think that's why she joined the cast? Do you think it's for the
to
receipts?
Have it all on like, film.
I mean, to have it all on film would actually be a pretty great idea, but I am very scared for her. What's funny is I did put a poll out on r/BravoHousewives on Reddit. Who is the worst husband, cheating Michael Darby from Potomac or this guy Ralph from Atlanta. Maybe it's just because Ralph is new, but people were like, oh my god, Michael. But I'm like, oh my gosh, you guys, he's gonna murder her.
Michael's done butt grabs in like public settings. He's never like trolled away for 3 days and then taken screenshots of his sleeping wife.
This is when this podcast transitions into a true crime podcast.
True crime podcast.
And we get sued for libel for saying
this is all murder. Alleged. A murder she drew.
We don't hope she dies.
No. No,
Murder She Drew is the new name of the podcast.
I hope that Drew watches this at the very least and hopes to get out of it.
She knows that she's being gaslit. She runs like to the back of the house and talks to her mom. She's like, he's like crazy.
I hope that she's watching this and it kind of puts perspective because she's one of the three housewives / friend ofs who are mid-divorce, mid-getting back together, mid-not having anything happen to their marriage.
I think she has perspective already. She's just in like in a weird spot. She talks about it with the friends where she's like, one day we're getting divorced, the next we're not. She just needs I think she's self-aware enough and it'll take a couple episodes maybe.
I hope she gets a restraining order while she does.
And when she does it, she needs to hire Kenya's divorce attorney because he is my best friend.
He does that thing where like when he doesn't think he's being filmed, it's revealed that he's like just the coolest guy. He's and he like, says like the sweetest
baby,
thing.
You are a queen. You got to get yourself out of there. You were doing the right thing. I'm like,
and you know, it's
crying.
Nice because he doesn't think there's a camera.
Oh my gosh. I loved it. It was so sweet.
He gave her the best pep talk. Better than any Coach Shaw pep talk I've ever heard.
Sorry, Coach Shaw. Also, Kenya is in the middle of another weird thing where she's describing what is basically verbal and emotional abuse and being like, well, I don't know if we're going to get back together, but I am going to still serve. I just feel so bad for these women that they're stuck in these situations. I can tell this season is going to bring it. Like, holy smokes, we're already in so deep and we're in episode 2.
And I really like Drew, but I think it's because I'm fascinated by her story.
I'm scared for...
Thank goodness the Bravo cameras are there. They're protecting
documenting
her.
It all.
And her mom.
Should we move on to Salt Lake City?
Salt Lake City! So this week on Salt Lake City, we are in Sundance Week. And I have to say that we went to a lot of parties this week and none of them were brought to us by Lisa, the Sundance Queen.
A real shame we couldn't see the McMillions event party.
I would have pulled off every single, like, me in a drunken state, there would not have been one McMillions pull-off sticker left
the theme
for the rest
of the party.
Of us.
That was a really cool idea in hindsight.
It's a cool idea. It is literally the plot of that documentary is those stickers.
When I was watching it, she's like, those step and repeat, you pull it off, and it's like a lotto ticket, like a scratch-offy thing, pull-off thing. And I was like, oh my god, that's such a good idea. But after the step and repeat, our three drunk asses are going to just start ripping shit off. Also, I'm aggressive. I'd probably rip the whole thing down.
Bad job, Sundance Queen.
And it was open to the public, so we could have gone.
Why don't we think? So Lisa is making a huge deal about her hosting 6 different parties. We do not see a single one of them.
I mean, it is impressive.
That is an HBO event, what she is.
I don't understand what the word hosting means in this sense. They paid her to set it up. That sounds like an event coordinator.
She's coordinating it. Like there's a client and she's bringing in her tequila. She's like orchestrating the whole event.
Okay.
With her unpaid assistant, her husband.
Yeah.
But then we got introduced to the actual Sundance Queen, whose name is Catherine. And
she's the one
who owns Park City Live, which I looked up and it's just like kind of LA Live-esque.
Okay.
Very cool.
The reason we meet Catherine is because we are there on Whitney's husband, Justin's party bus. So Whitney has this crazy party for her husband every year that she says one ups it, but then describes that she does the same thing every year, as Julia pointed out. So I thought that was kind of confusing.
Yeah.
So we are on a party bus. We get to Catherine's house. Before we even get to Catherine's house, everybody is dressed in what you would wear to like a fun party bus party, like leather, skin tight clothes.
It was like a cocktail Vegas
body
suits.
What was Whitney wearing to her husband's party?
Yeah, she has a camo
tie-dye print t-shirt and like high-rise leggings. Like that's what you wear to Starbucks and Target.
I was disappointed in Whitney's look in that.
It was very confusing. And she's like, maybe it's because she was like giving her husband a lap dance in front of all of her friends.
Well, he has sacrificed so much for her And it leads to a classic Whitney list of things that he has sacrificed.
Oh my gosh, you're so right. Alex, can you name some of those things on those lists?
It was like his job, his ex-wife.
Yeah, I was going to say his marriage, Whitney.
His relationship with his children from his first marriage.
His relationship with the church.
The list went on.
Basically
and on.
Every aspect of like his social life, his social and professional life, every aspect of both of those was in sacrifice of this relationship.
But what does he get? As a consolation prize?
A bus party.
He gets to take a tequila shot out of his wife's belly button.
And gross. Go to Catherine's house.
Like he does every year. But this year's different for some reason.
Because they keep just making it bigger and better every year. Like this year, they brought the Bravo crew.
I loved her toast for him there when she was like, to the sexiest motherfucker here. And there's like this tempered reaction.
Alex, you're doing your own. To the sexiest motherfucker here.
Darlings.
And my husband, Justin.
And everyone's like, okay. All right. I guess.
Thanks for letting me on this bus, Whitney.
I did have fun at Justin's party, though.
Oh, Justin's party was the highlight.
This party.
It was the highlight.
I loved that Catherine, the actual Sundance queen, threw so much shade at Lisa. She was like,
It was not subtle.
No, she said, I thought Lisa was coming, so I bought her tequila.
Like, I would never have done this as like a cute nod to you. Like, I understand you think you're the Sundance queen of this. Really sweet, so I'm gonna support you.
She was trying to be polite to her guests.
She's like, she never
would have bought Vita tequila. Oh. And then Lisa wasn't there.
Should we try to get our hands on a bottle of Vita tequila?
Oh, I will try to get my hands on a bottle of Vita tequila. And I'm not gonna go to Park City to try to drink it because the amount they're gonna give me, it's a thimble size.
I told you guys before we started, I don't understand how this can be a housewife because in Utah, you can't have over a certain limit served at once. So you can't get a double anything. It's going to be one
Heather
shot.
Heather orders my drink order and she's disappointed. If I had ordered my drink, which Heather also orders, Tito's and water, I'd be disappointed.
Ew,
it would just be water.
Really?
But it's like seltzer water. It's not like water mixed with the Tito's.
Wait, you mean you don't get the Ramona seltzer water and a shot of Tito's and then like 45 limes and a whole mint leaf plant and then you call it the Ramona like it's something interesting? No, she gets a gin and tonic with all that stuff in it. I love Ramona's.
Oh, I was on board until it was gin.
I think so. I don't know. It's Ramona. Who knows?
Speaking of gin.
Gin Shaw.
Transition.
Gin Shaw also hosted quite a great party, actually. I had fun at Jen's party.
Jen's party was very fun.
Which was the VIP party for her
cousins.
Hang on.
I'm going to put a pin in that. It was a V. This is what we're told. My cousin entered into Sundance, and the VIP was so big that we couldn't hold that at the event place anymore, so we held it at my house. That's what we were told.
They had three showings of the movie, and then they had a VIP event scheduled, so they rescheduled it at Jin's
house
last minute. They were only given 10 hours.
Tony Vinuku.
Thank you, Alex.
Documentary filmmaker.
Did you look up the documentary at all?
After I saw its grand screening in this episode, I thought I didn't need to.
So what I took that whole setup as is like my cousin couldn't get into Sundance, so we did it at my house.
That is exactly what I thought as well.
Thank
I thought
you.
This is so.
Oh, I'm so naive.
Yeah, Julia, you're
they only
you're
had like a little reception room, only 50 people. They clearly had to move it.
Also, it must have been like a short because I can't imagine at this party all those people watching an hour
standing.
And a half like documentary.
No, they said it was like 15 minutes, and it was about the boy rap band that the guys were all wearing their own t-shirts. But the best thing that happened at that party is, well, first backstory, we learn that our queen, Heather Gay, our favorite person in the world, was a virgin when she married her husband when she was very young, like 1920, and she has only been with her husband. So now she is 40 something and has slept with one guy. That is so stressful and weird. And like,
I think that she has had a few years to sleep around.
That's not what she was telling
the cowboy.
I don't know if she slept with the cowboy, but what she is telling us is I am entering a part of my life that I have never explored at an older age than most people do, and so it's very confusing. And I felt bad for her.
But guess what happens this episode?
She goes home with the hottest dude at the party. Get it, Heather?
Curtis.
And he's oh my god,
and she calls his projector a printer.
She does. And she says that the equipment, this projector's equipment, is so huge that she's going to have to deal with the consolation prize, and that is Curtis's dick. Her game is aggressive and delightful, and I love it.
Hey, it worked.
When we were watching her flirt, I was, like, ready to go home with Heather. Heather was funny. I love it.
Jen introduced them, and she was kind of like, you two are going to sleep together.
That was great. That was a good a point for Jen moment, but yes. There was also a low point for Jen moment in this episode.
What was it, Alex?
That was her, and I can't believe she did this. I was on her side, saying she didn't say the grandfather comments.
She said, I was drunk and I didn't remember. That is not an excuse. You're an adult woman. You don't get to say, I don't remember. That's something you get to say when you're 19 and all your friends
hate you. She says that in her talking head, but to Mary in person, she didn't say it.
Yeah, that is a low point. She should just own it. Take notes from Giselle. I said the word floozy.
Oopsie-daisy.
Like, just own it. It kind of makes us feel like Jen's all talk and no
follow through.
Yeah. Because, she doesn't like the direct confrontation from Mary.
Because it was confusing to think about, like, well, then what the fuck? Where was she coming from last episode with Mary? What did she think Mary was mad at her about?
That's what I mean. It's all bullshit. And yeah. We even see it at the Catherine party to go back because Mary is there. And Jen is like clearly visibly nervous that Mary's there. And they have a little talk. And Mary's like, hey, you hurt my feelings. And Jen's kind of like, buck, 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 doesn't say anything. And then they both say, Mary says, water under bridge, let's move forward. And I was like, oh, good. But Julia pointed out, we've had this conversation before.
No, in the talking heads directly after that, Mary's like, I just don't like her. Not going to deal with her.
Yep, done
is
with
that
her.
Bad?
So none of it's real. None of this is
none
real.
None of it's real. What is real, though, is that Mary, a grown-ass woman, sleeps in a bed while surrounded by of her toys.
Mary's
her
bedroom.
Closet / bedroom is the most stressful thing I've ever seen in my whole entire life.
So Julia's like, oh my God, her closet's so messy. Her closet's so stressful. And I said, Julia, there's a bed in there. That's her bedroom. And Julia's just jaw drops.
I fell to the floor.
There were mannequin heads with hats on them. Like
all the wigs. Like, you know when you like you have the sense that something's watching you and you're having like a really hard time sleeping? Like I could not sleep in that. I would just see the mannequins just looking at me in their headless knit kind of way.
So Julia, I have a question. Who else was there with Mary and the mannequin heads? Wasn't there somebody there that she knows?
My new favorite. I hope you're Charlinda stand, Alex.
I thought this was the funniest thing.
I knew it. What? I know that the internet has been up on this, but I would like to say your grandmother's brother's daughter is just your first cousin once removed.
So I'm going to backtrack from Julia a little bit. The woman she's describing works for Mary as the questionable nurse / cleaning lady in scrubs.
The beatboxer.
And they have a hoot together. I would venture to say, this is Mary's best friend.
But she also, with the caveat, they're not close at all. And she does not know her life at all.
So Charlinda, the family member.
First cousin once removed.
Is Mary's housekeeper. And we see Mary and her dancing. They're talking. And we're like, oh my gosh, best friends. And Mary explains their relation and then states she doesn't know anything about her personal life, which is the most insane thing I've ever heard ever. It's like,
it's also bullshit because Mary, as we know, loves her family dearly. There's no way they don't know about
and she says
each
it in a way
families.
Like she doesn't care to know. She doesn't need
yeah she's
to
like
know
oh my god the help ew her. That's like the vibe that she puts out, and it was so I don't know. But Mary also kind of reminds me of Catherine in the way that she's so self-absorbed. Like, she might – like, Charlinda might actually be like, oh, my God, my son said this. My husband
Charlinda's
said this.
Like a Danny to her, you're saying?
Maybe, yes. Yeah. Like, I think that Charlinda is telling her all about her life, and Mary's just, like, doing whatever Mary does and not listening.
Yes.
It makes me sad because I think Charlinda's going to watch this and be really hurt by what Mary said because she had no idea.
And I think Charlinda knows that she's Mary's only friend.
Team Charlinda.
I think, and you know what? I think Mary knows too.
We're all set.
Can we move on?
To Stuart? Stuart, that elusive figure. Stuart the assistant. Jen Shaw's first assistant.
/ totally business partner. That was not an assistant office.
The Jen Shaw roller rink, you mean?
Jen Shaw is skating around this WeWork office that she's pretending is her own.
And Stuart says, what are you doing now?
That is not her assistant. Bullshit.
That Stuart, come on. He drives her places. He drops her off at Whitney's later in the episode. But also, I just want to bring him up because he has an alter ego. And I love drunk alter egos. And his is Stu Chainz, the rapper.
That he's like, shut up, Jen. Stop talking in front of the cameras. And she will not just keep going.
Oh, Stuart loves
Jen's
it.
Jen's alter ego is J Boogie.
J Boogie. Oh, yeah. The boy band loves it. J Boogie and God. Stu Chainz. That's all I want to say about Stuart. I can't wait to get to know him more.
How could you guys not remember the best part of Jinshaw's party? The amazing cameo by Katie and Lala. Okay, but did Lala and Katie need to be in that scene? Absolutely not. They brought nothing.
Absolutely nothing.
So you're telling
me. They
just
say, get it, girl, to Heather. That's it.
She didn't need the motivational speech. She could get Curtis on her own.
They were literally there for a movie. They're both from there. It makes sense for them to be there.
Bravo's like, hey, you're in town. Come on over.
Yeah.
Okay. Like, honestly, Lizette, they're probably friends with the Bravo producers. That
they're
are
like, hey, come get a drink. Oh, my God. Come to set tomorrow. Like that.
There are too many things lined up for them not to make an appearance.
All right. Fair enough. Were they boring while they were there? Yes.
Absolutely. And Lala's usually a blast. But we don't even get to see her PJ.
Okay, this is the best part. So Brooks is going to be in the first ever.
Julia, you're saying it wrong. Can I please say it correctly? Brooks is going to be in the first ever Park City Fashion Week. Oh my God. I'm like literally having an anxiety attack. Oh my God. I cannot believe
that Dad is not going to be here for this and that you and Dad are fighting and now he's not going to my show.
I'm having an anxiety attack. Okay, first off, I actually really like Brooks's tracksuits. I took to the internet, and did you know that I had to enter my email so that Brooks will email me when I'm allowed to enter the lottery to purchase these tracksuits, which
How much
is,
are they, Julia? How much are they?
I can't tell because I...
They don't have a price listed? They don't,
the website is just me entering in my email address. And then as soon as the Salt Lake City episode airs next week, then they will send me an email. And at that point in time, I may purchase this tracksuit.
What are they called? Brooks what?
Brooks Marks.
I know I can't find them.
Brooks Marks.
Funny story, Brooke with an E Marks is a porn star. And I also saw her hoo-ha while trying to look up Brooks Marks.
Oh my gosh. I am on the Brooks Marks website, which also is different. It's brooksmarks.com. When you click it, it says available, and then it gives us the date very quickly.
Right. It's the next airing of
Salt City. 12/23. You put in your email. You submit enter using password. So it's very exclusive. It's a completely black website with red font and a GIF of him walking down the runway. That is all we see.
Brooks is playing the game. He knows what he's doing.
When Kim, the fashion designer coordinator, is talking to Brooks and Meredith, she goes, we were so happy to incorporate you.
He did not. And, you know, he got there by the skin of his teeth with that whole montage of everything going wrong in the house.
I also think it's funny that he showed up 45 minutes late. Nobody was like, oh, no, Brooks, thank gosh you're here. Everyone's like,
oh,
hey,
you
can go to hair.
Yeah, go to hair. Are you ready? Do you think you need makeup?
I don't think you do. You have any problem areas? He's like this face. No. So, he was 45 minutes late because the dogs are pooping all over the house because the fire alarms are going off because the toilets are flooding. Very confusing. So they have
very
to
very confusing.
They're just rushing away. And the whole time the fire alarms are going off, which was very stressful. Dogs are barking and shitting everywhere because they're freaking out because it's loud noises. And Brooks is running around going, oh, my God, I can't deal with this. Oh my God.
With eye patches and a gold face.
Oh, yeah. Did you cook something? Were you cooking something? Were you cooking something?
And Meredith goes, no, I already told you I wasn't cooking anything. The monotone in this house is hilarious. But you guys, I'm putting two and two together. When I go to.
Are you talking about the two and two that clogged the toilet?
No, I'm putting two and two with the Jinshaw sleepover.
Huh?
Okay.
What?
This is what. Okay. This is what made me think of it. So when I'm looking for Brooks Marks, which is hard to say, tracksuits, and the website does not go, I click shopping to see if I can see anything. And I see a bunch of fan-made stuff that says grinder, 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 grinder. which is what Jin Shah was yelling. And I was like, that's weird. Why is it in Brooke's stuff? And then I remember what our beautiful friends on the Dames Who Dish, Anne and Gina, said, that Brooks has never come out as gay. That's why we didn't get to see the whole sleepover scene. It's because Brooks has never come out as gay, and Grindr is a gay dating app. So when Jin Shah is yelling Grindr, 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 she's clearly talking to Brooks, but because he has not come out as gay, they did not hear it.
That's a lot of reading between the lines of Grindr, Grindr,
but do you
Grindr,
see
Grindr.
What I'm trying to say? Because, no, really? I think I'm a genius.
And that's interesting, and you get the Detective Doty Award, but I'm going to have to chew on it.
Because, like, it's just weird that the sleepover was such a big deal. We didn't see anything. Remember we were saying there's something missing? I think we know why there's something missing now.
Because what we saw wasn't enough to be, like, to justify why Brooks was so, like, anti-Jen following.
And now I think we know, because she's saying Grindr, 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 and he's like, oh my god, I just got outed on national television, please cut it, and now we can't see it. But unrelated that I saw it. But it's unfortunate when you Google Brooks Marks tracksuits, that's what comes up. So Brooks, like, launch your website.
Well, I'm very excited to get my password into his website on December 23rd at 11 p.m.
One quick final thing before we end this.
Yes.
Meredith's laugh. We can't go past that.
Elizabeth, have you made it your text message yet?
Oh, my text tone?
It's insane, this episode. It follows her hilarious joke.
Oh, to Whitney? When Whitney shows up all nervous to walk the runway and she goes, well, don't.
Try not to fall down the stairs.
And Whitney's unmade-up face.
Like, oh, baffled. Oh,
all right, let's get to Southern Charm. Mm-hmm. All right, Southern Charm. I have two questions for you Southern Charm enthusiasts.
That's us.
Everybody keeps saying, oh, Catherine doesn't call me back. Catherine never hangs out with us. Catherine only talks to me when I need her. Mm-hmm. What is Catherine doing when she's not doing Bravo stuff? Because it's a Bravo cast member saying she never reaches out. So what's Catherine doing?
At least, like, the past couple seasons, there's always a plot point of, like, Catherine's not responding to any of us mm-hmm. or talking to any of us. And it's usually gets into, like, these depression holes.
Oh, it's sad.
Where she doesn't want to reach out or talk to anyone. And it usually ends with a bunch of people crashing at her house and being like, why aren't you talking to any of us?
Oh, my God. Okay.
Yes. Yeah. And her explaining that she was just, like, in a deep, like, hole of, like, just feeling like.
Okay. I mean, so Catherine is a sympathetic character.
She's complicated. She's complex.
That's kind of what I'm getting from her. They're saying that she's not reaching out to anybody, but it's not like she's, like, partying with Shep or something. She's, like, just MIA.
She's having Catherine time.
And I mean, like, she is problematic in her own sense, but she can also have depression and be problematic. She also has these
like major issues happening in her life courtesy of a Mr. Thomas Ravenel.
God. Okay, so this week on their like outside Southern Charm news, which might be an insight, we all made a comment that we noticed the kids' pictures were blurred out last episode where they haven't been before. But in real time right now, Thomas just did a interview with like the son or something.
He accused Catherine of giving his son fetal alcohol syndrome.
And
publicly.
Which is pretty gross. If that was true, pretty gross. If it's not true, pretty gross. And so fetal alcohol syndrome has to be diagnosed by a doctor. And what he was saying, like his backup evidence, didn't make sense. So there was a lot of really questionable stuff. And I think it was just like a smear campaign, whether they have it or not.
But a smear campaign that involves your own son.
Which is disgusting.
Awful. It's nasty.
It's disgusting. It just, like, that's what I'm saying. It doesn't matter if it's true or
it's
not.
It's on brand for Thomas, so.
Absolutely. It's not surprising.
And now he's trying to get full custody.
He's horrible.
So it's like, it's consistently nasty and it's all so public. And
Julia, say you are deciding who gets custody of these kids. The only thing you have to judge that your decision is watching all of Southern Charm.
I would give them to Catherine.
Absolutely.
I haven't even seen Thomas in an episode and I would give them to Catherine. Yeah, his behavior is unbelievably horrible.
And if you had met his former girlfriend, Ashley, it just goes to Catherine 150 million.
I want her to come back just so we can talk about her. She is one of the most captivating Bravo presences ever. It's
My second question is, Patricia asks it, why do the guys coddle Catherine?
Why does Patricia coddle the guys is my question.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Okay.
I think, well, it's a loaded thing because Patricia's been pretty cold on Catherine the entire series.
That's mm-hmm. the vibe I caught. For any reason.
Because she was Team Thomas this whole time.
Yes, she was Team Thomas.
Back in until the she could not be Team Thomas. Until Whitney, cued her in.
Was like, Mom, please stop. Mm-hmm. Whitney and his handsome mustache. I mean,
but also the guys coddle Catherine. If we're going to entertain that question, Shep has had an intimate relationship with her. Whitney's had an intimate relationship with her.
Oh.
Craig had a crush on her and then became like her best friend. Basically. Mm-hmm. So. Okay.
And then Austin takes cues from Craig.
Yes.
But I think that they also were just so happy when she shows up because she is a cast member. And I do think they're sincerely worried about her and her mental stability. So when she showed up in her little girly girl outfit with her very pink tennis shoes.
Vaping.
They were just like, I love your look. You've never looked so great. She has so many redeemable moments, and then it just kind of self-destructs.
They've seen the shit she has been through on this show.
I mean, Catherine, because didn't she start the show when she was 19?
Oh, and she was a baby, and she was being hit on by a 53-year-old or whatever.
She just kind of strikes me as somebody who wasn't able to grow up for one reason or another, and it's kind of mm-hmm. sad. Watching basically what is a adult 19-year-old, 18-year-old at this point. She just seems you guys have said, she's naive/ignorant. I don't know. She just kind of feels alone in the world.
Yeah, and it's hard. I know you haven't seen these episodes, Elizabeth, but to look back on Thomas's ex-girlfriend Ashley episodes with Catherine, where Ashley is just going batshit crazy on Catherine, and Catherine comes off as cool as a cucumber. And she's like, I'm putting my kids first. I'm not going to let this bear poke me.
And she's also got Danny fighting for her in a lot of those situations.
Yes, she does. But it's hard not to root for Catherine. I also think it's because we've known Catherine for so long.
I don't want to blame it all on one person, but it really does seem like she has been poisoned by Thomas.
It's like a forced state of arrested development because of her relationship with Thomas at such a young age.
I think arrested development is the absolute perfect way of saying what I'm trying to articulate. She seems younger than she actually is, and she seems confused. Even the way that she handles really sensitive topics, her ancestor statue being brought down, it's kind of a little kid's way of looking at it, how she's describing it. So that's kind of arrested development, I think, is perfect. That's so sad.
It's sad. It's sad tragic. To talk about her.
It's a bummer. Does she need to leave the spotlight to grow? Or do you think this is kind of it for her, regardless if Bravo cameras are there or not?
I think she's done a lot of growth with Bravo cameras on her. So, to
hopefully,
be honest.
Yeah, this season will be a growing experience for her in that regard.
Yeah.
And I think Bravo is holding her accountable.
Her interaction with Danny and the way she kind of doubles down on it this episode isn't great.
How she feels so betrayed by Danny is kind of a bummer. Instead of being hey, maybe whatever it was, hey, I was depressed. I'm sorry I didn't reach out to you. I was just in a panic and I don't know what to do. She was just why didn't you call me? But again, that's an immature way of approaching it.
Yeah, but the way Danny approached the conversation from last episode was unfortunate.
Oh, God, Danny.
It's like she's been holding back so long that she just couldn't.
She couldn't resist. Yes, exactly. The other thing I'd like to talk about is the Austin Pringle off limits comment.
Oh, my gosh. The guy code. I do like how Pringle handled that. He was like, there's no guy code. I'm 43.
I wish she had done that, though, in person.
In person?
Instead of you're right, man. I love you, bro. We're friends.
I think he was just on his best behavior around Miss Patricia. This was a very heavy Patricia Michael episode.
It was. Lots of Michael.
We open with her saying, can you bring me a little something to eat with my coffee? Breakfast, Patricia? Also, my favorite Michael line, maybe, this episode.
Which one?
It's when he's serving that appetizer.
The caviar.
And they're asking what the ingredients are and how it's usually sour cream is the base. And he goes, sour cream is so pedestrian.
Okay, Michael, let's simmer
Michael,
down.
Michael, such a snob.
This is the most we've ever seen of him being a snob, Julia. Am I correct in saying that? He's usually much more mild-mannered.
Him having to have the crab bake with the newspaper, I think kind of killed him inside.
Art.
I think he did want
he wanted a fancy
the
pants.
Formality of the fancy dinner. And he's like, pulling all of the plates, being like, I guess this is crap bake. Like,
it's raining outside.
Trish
is, like, he's like putting
reading
the newspaper.
She's getting
she's
the
like,
newspaper
oh, the financial now. Section. Let's put that up.
I love when all the guys are jumping in the pool and it cuts to him watching, going, hot time in Old Town tonight.
But I was thrilled about the pool jumping because we got another Pringle ab.
Woo! Pringle ab, everybody's favorite.
Hey, Pringle's great. I love how, like, there'll be, like, the drama of Catherine and everything, and then it'll cut to single dad Pringle with his kids.
There are no rules.
I did like Pringle's wife, though. I think they have a good relationship.
I think they do, too.
Yeah,
and he definitely has a type because his wife and Madison
look
exactly
so much
the alike.
Same. Austin is like, I know you hung out with Madison. And Pringle's like, yeah. And Austin's like, okay, so just letting you know, if we're going to be cool, she's off limits. And like you guys said, Pringle's like, okay. But I've always thought that was really weird. So you get to claim somebody that you're not even with as off limits for somebody you don't really know.
So predictable. That would be an Austin move.
I think that's why Pringle didn't address it further with Austin. Like, there's no point. I'm not going to argue this stupid point.
Like, whatever.
Point.
Yeah.
Like, move on. It was kind of rude and disrespectful towards the dinner. But like,
you're
yeah,
right. All right,
that.
Pringle. You get the Pringle pass.
The Pringle pass.
He's just so mature.
For a 43-year-old
one,
child.
One, congratulations, Austin. You now have your beer in a can.
Oh my
good
God.
For you.
That he forces upon Patricia at the end.
So Austin also loses his shit on Craig when Craig's like, please don't get back together with Madison. Please stop talking about her. And I kind of get where Austin is. Like, sometimes you just need to, like, grieve and get it out there. But it sounds like Craig has heard this story one too many times. And I did not see this coming. I'm on Craig's side with his conversation with Madison, which is like, hey, he's still grieving your relationship. Every time you talk to him, you're giving him hope. Back off.
Craig did a really good job, like, not leading the Madison, but helping her figure out what she really needed to say, which was she ultimately doesn't see herself walking down the aisle with Austin, and that
yeah.
he made the point he can't let you go unless you fully let him go. And that text she sent to him, like, I will always be there. Like, Madison.
Kind of like a fuck Madison, like, back off.
Let him go.
It was so bad, I thought, where I was just convinced that Austin, like, made that up.
Yeah.
But it sucks that was real. And Craig's right. They should not be in each other's lives.
So does Madison doing that because she knows he's wrong, but she needs to move on?
Well, she
like,
thinks they're still, like, best friends, is what she's
you
saying.
Don't get to be best friends when best friends don't hurt each other. So you're not allowed to be, if you are romantically involved, you're not allowed to be best friends while somebody else has a different expectation of you. So if she actually is his best friend, then she needs to do what's right for him, which is back off.
But they've been on again, off again for 2 years. So it would be a hard habit to quit. She would like have to delete his number. She probably doesn't have it memorized. You know, like just delete him off your phone. Try really hard to be his cast member without starting this up. I am really sad to say, but I don't think Pringle's enough of a distraction for Madison.
No, he's kind of a ding-dong.
I love Pringle. I so wish they were together. I don't think they are. I think me and the whole internet wish that Madison and Pringle were together.
All right, time for awards?
Yes, please.
Mm-hmm. My award this week is that Erica Girardi, what are you talking about? I totally love my husband on TV award. And this award goes to Whitney of Salt Lake City. Both Erica and Whitney are married to, well, Erica, but are both married to older gentlemen and really make a point to advertise how much they love their husbands.
Oh, Elizabeth.
Last season on Beverly Hills, all the ladies came over. They all met Tom. They listened to his stories. They were all totally enthralled by him, going, oh, yes, yes, yes. And Erica was all over him, really making a point, like, look how attracted to him I am. And that's kind of what this episode of Salt Lake City was for me. Like, we got to see Whitney lap dancing all over her husband in the party bus. And then later on, when she and Heather have their meeting at the bar / not allowed to have alcohol bar, Heather's saying, well, do you feel attracted to your husband? And Whitney felt a little too quick to be like, yes, of course. Oh my gosh. Yes, I love him so much. So attracted. And I mean, I know Whitney's 30 and her husband's probably about twice her age. And
52.
He's 52. Okay. And I think that's totally fine and good, but Whitney's smoking as in Erica is too, and it just feels a little too heavy-handed. And maybe it is real, but it's feeling a little late on thick at this point.
Well, at least they won an award.
Yeah, at least they got an award. Alex?
Well, also Whitney themed.
Wow.
Santa's Making a List Award goes to Whitney for her aforementioned lists. But because this is the holiday season, you're getting more than one gift from me.
Wow.
And the second award, Shep Rose gets the Cinephile Award this week.
Oh.
What?
Now, I am an aspiring cinephile. I try to watch a lot of movies. I want to know everything about movies. Shep Rose also, based on his social media presence, tries to be a movie guy. When he sees Whitney at Patricia's party, he sees Whitney's new like facial hair and goes, "You look like Paul Schrader, the writer of Taxi Driver and other Scorsese movies and director of First Reformed." It's just a weird, like, obscure film reference for them to
reference someone who's not even on camera.
And then Shep has to say, "You know, the famous director."
I like your Shep voice.
It's just like a raspy, I can't do it that well. And then Whitney says immediately, "Keep it down." It was a great moment.
He knew I wouldn't play to the masses.
Alex, I have a question. So a couple episodes ago, Shep made an Oedipus reference, and now he's making this obscure Scorsese reference.
Paul
Schrader. Is this who Shep actually is, or is he trying to prove that he's just not one of the bros?
I don't know. I've seen him post shit about, like, loving Coen Brothers movies and stuff. So I don't know. I think he does like movies.
But, like, Coen Brothers is pretty, like, out there. Like,
I think this is who Shep is. He's been very consistent on that.
I think it's who he is. I think there's probably more of it that's just so, like, strange that they have to cut it, which is why it's so funny to me that they kept in this Paul Schrader reference. Like, that's no, so weird. But it was,
and then Whitney reprimanded.
Yeah, Whitney being like, that's not consumable to our general audience, Shep.
But we're gonna keep it in the episode. It's just so weird to me. But I mean, it was heaven for me, of course. It was my world's colliding.
I know, you little film buff, you. All right, Julia.
Right. I'm giving this award, and I kind of disagree with my award title at the beginning, and I'll explain why, but it's the Single and Ready to Pringle Award.
Ooh.
And I'm going to give it to Heather Gay.
Yes.
Because she rocked it. But this award really should be superseded by the fact that all of the women from Roni are always single and ready to pringle.
Yeah.
Yeah. And better at it than Pringle, it seems.
Yes.
Yeah, way better.
I love it, Julia.
So, Heather Gay. Oh,
congrats, gosh. Heather.
I love it.
That was, congrats, what a great, Heather. That's one of the best happy endings I've seen ever.
Heather Gay has game.
She does have game. She kills it.
She lights a Curtis with his big printer.
Speaking of movies, Alex, you can join us later on this week for a very special episode when we break down Candace's from Potomac's movie, The Christmas Lottery.
Holiday classic.
With our good friends Rocky Pajarito from Everything Now on Twitch and Jackie Quinn from the upcoming podcast, The Slap Slaps. Tune in a couple days and we'll have that very special Christmas episode.
Some expert film commentary.
Yes, we had so much fun with them, and it is very fun to listen to three people who actually know what they're talking about talk about a movie that did not know what it was talking about.
Hey, five people. Come on.
Julia and I are doing our best. Well, thank you guys so much for joining me.
Thank you, anytime.
You can catch new episodes of the Don't Be All Like Uncool podcast every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and Podbean. You can also follow us on Instagram at @likeuncoolpodcast. Remember to rate, subscribe, review, and mention it all. Thank you.